Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, Answers for Healing, and Infinite Love, a tale of healing, miracles, spiritual communication, and a guide to your soul awareness. I am delighted today to welcome Edward Fulyoun, author of Ordinary Goodness, a guide to living a life with passion and happiness in the face of normal life's daily challenges. Hello, Edward, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me on your show. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And Edward, as listeners of Healing From Within have come to expect over the years, my guests and I share our intimate experiences and our growing understanding of metaphysical realities and multidimensional life forces, which help us to enhance both the spiritual and physical qualities of our lives so we may discover answers to age-old questions such as, who am I? And what is life all about? In today's episode of Healing From Within, Edward Fulyoun, author of The Power of Meditation and a senior minister at the Center for Spiritual Living in Santa Rosa, California, will share with us how caring about ordinary things often leads to meaningful and extraordinary life experiences, and how faith is a muscle that must be exercised. Edward, I always love to ask my guests to think back through their childhood for a memory of a person, place, or event that may have been meaningful to them and may have shown them or others around them the values and the life path and lifestyle and work that would be important to them as adults. So think back, because I think the plan is within us from the very beginning.
That's so true, and what a great question for me. I can immediately think of an example. She is my role model of values and kindness. My grandmother comes to mind immediately. In fact, in my book, there is a little picture of her, a photo taken on her 16th birthday when she was getting married. This woman was my role model in that. And I didn't know she was impacting me at the time, but the way she lived her life and the way she listened to her grandchildren, how she made herself available to us, really set me on the path of valuing kindness. And it was only much later, as I look back in my life and I saw how she was shaping me in such a way that I would have strength to face these turbulent times based on how she was instilling in me these values of kindness, of stick-to-itiveness, of being there for other people, and common decency, I would say.
Absolutely beautifully said, and she must have been a terrific person to know. Now, you also mention Meister Eckhart, the medieval Christian mystic who wrote about spirituality in a way that reaches beyond any particular faith. Tell us something of him. I was fascinated by your description of him.
He talks about a light that is in us, and he calls it the soul or the intellect. And he says that this light in us, we didn't create it. We cannot uncreate it. It's just there waiting for us to turn to it. And when we do turn to it, we find that it was always there, even though we may forget it, even though we may attempt to try to live our lives without being in relationship to it, it remains there waiting for us to turn to it. And when I read that, I realized he was talking about something very natural to us. I call it ordinary goodness. And I share with him the idea that when we do turn to this light, or I call it ordinary goodness, that it comes alive in us, and then it has the ability to guide us. But until we do pay attention to it, it might as well not be there, because we can ignore it. We can forget it. It won't diminish it, but it will appear to not be there.
You know, when you're talking, I'm thinking of a song that used to come to mind. Who's that knocking at my door? And it's like there is an opening, but you have
right.
to welcome it, invite it in, and pay attention. Yeah,
it is
the soul and ordinary goodness. What inspired you to write Ordinary Goodness?
I wanted to, you know, it's almost as if I was writing this book for these particular turbulent times, and I didn't know it at the time. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that I was writing a book that would be inspiration or a comfort to people who wanted to be reminded that no matter how turbulent the times are, no matter how much change, unexpected or unwanted or just surprising change there is in our world, that there remains something in us that's very powerful, that we can use to connect to each other, that we can use to consult with for our choices and how we get through this world. And it is that goodness inside us, and it is, well, some people would call it love, some people call it consciousness. Whatever it is, when we turn to it, this book is about the turning to it so that it can help us.
And thank you for saying that and declaring in your book the world is a beautiful place to be, no matter what the challenges, it really is. You know, over the weekend, I saw a movie, The Shack, and I had read the book. You know that story, yeah?
Yes.
And I had read that book years ago, and I found the vision of the writer and movie makers to be very accurate in its depiction of our higher world or the afterlife after a physical death. And as a medium connecting with energies, souls, and feeling this energy of peace and goodness and love that you just described, that we need to hold on to in a vision of soul life in times of loss and challenges. Now, the story was about a father who lost his young daughter. He had a near-death experience. He communicated with various aspects of the divine and learned to forgive his daughter's murderer and find mm-hmm. greater faith and love for life. And he learns that it's not God who creates the problems of the world, nor is it anybody's fault for the tragedies that befall us. It is a greater plan by an evolving universal force that allows accepts us all to find our way in a world that has both goodness and, unfortunately, evil. But obviously there's a place for that also, and a reason that we may discover along the way. But it's amazing that I saw the film after so many years, and it had such a beautiful meaning to it, like your book and like what we're expressing here to our listeners.
Especially during times of challenge or crisis or tragedy, those are the times when we may be knocked off of our center and we don't mm-hmm. remember the common things that we know how to do, to be kind to each other, to love each other, to look within, to seek guidance. If, you know, it could be as simple as if I stub my toe, I might forget that the rest of my body is fine, but in the moment I stub my toe, all of my attention goes to the pain in that toe. And sometimes our world is like that. There's such a rush of urgent information. Or if we get knocked off of our center, we might forget everything else that is beautiful and worthy in the world. And it takes an act of commitment, of will, to regularly and definitely turn our attention to what is also, simultaneously with the tragedy, what is also in the world. And we find in, you said it so beautifully, this rich world, both in the physical and the non-physical, there waiting to help us and assist us.
Yes, and what we focus our attention on, like the stubbed toe, will go on for longer than it has to if we can turn our attention. We've seen children do this. They get hurt, and a minute they cry, and then perhaps they have a treat, and you hug yeah. them, and you give them love, and it's gone. It's over. We've moved out of it, and suffering is like this, too. You can either choose to embrace it or move out of it. And what we put our thoughts on do manifest. It is created to this soul. It's connected to the soul we're talking about and to ordinary goodness. So what we wish to do is think positively. And this thought's been around for a very long time. But it's not only thinking positively, it's acting from within yeah. that heart-based energy of love and compassion.
Yeah. And it doesn't diminish the difficulty that a person goes through if they also try to lift up their spirits at the same time. It, you know, sometimes I think people think perhaps they're doing a disservice to their spiritual growth if they try to be positive or they try to improve their mood. Not at all. I think we're very complicated. We can feel the
yes.
appropriate sadness of a tragedy while we are seeking to also be lifted up at the same time.
Excellent. That's the whole ball of wax right there. We need to feel the emotion of the negativity, but we don't have to stay in it. We need to find a way past it because we need to have all these emotions. That's why I believe we're having a physical life. Now, how can caring about ordinary things result in extraordinary life experiences?
In our world today, there's such an emphasis on fast and big and the best and quick and spectacular mm-hmm. that sometimes we lose track of very simple things and we forget that it doesn't have to be the most spectacular sunset. It can be any sunset. It doesn't have to be the tallest mountain. It can be any mountain. And so when we start to recover the idea that in the very ordinary things of life, we see spectacular beauty, then we can begin to pay attention to it. Then we realize, I don't have to run the fastest mile. I don't have to go to the furthest point in the globe. I don't have to all of these things that society tells us, this is how you will be fulfilled. I can scale it back and see, goodness, there is worth and value and connection in a simple act of pausing to greet my neighbor. Something as ordinary as that, with such a small investment, will yield such a terrific return of connection and self-worth.
Yeah, absolutely. And you say in the book that humans and animals and plants flourish with regular expressions of care, kindness and affection, and it's possible to survive without it, but a caring touch or a sincere handshake or a friendly hug does wonders because of the warmth and the human connection communicated by such ordinary acts of kindness. Now, in my book, I address this the same way, this form of caring. And I wrote, I have learned as a result of deep meditation practices and the messages received from spirit that the giving and receiving of love is the major reason a soul welcomes a physical life. The giving of love may not necessarily include grand gestures, but rather it is communicated through glances, words, music, undivided attention and concern, and the time invested in others. While this applies to romantic love, it applies to all forms of attachments as well. If we ask the divine power to bring us greater love, then that is the first step towards achieving it. So this is what we talk about when we talk about manifestation or creation or magic, perhaps even magic. So let's go on to, I know you're going to love the next question because I love it and I love the word. What role does awe play in creating a more meaningful life?
Well, this is such a beautiful question, right? Because it's like everything else. The world, let's say, is filled up with awe, but if I don't see it,
right,
then it might as well not be there. So I really see the value of making space. It's like learning to play an instrument. I'm going to learn how to be awe-filled. I'm going to be looking for opportunities to let awe into my life. And the very simple first step is to become interested in life as if I think it's very important and it's very wonderful. It's the same thing. Then I discover awe is available in modest, ordinary things. You know, when I see some people walking through the world and they don't seem to show the symptoms of being filled with awe. They are in their phones. They are
yes.
going somewhere fast. They're not looking at anything. I just saw a video on the internet of a woman who unfortunately was so enraptured with her phone that she fell into a pond. She walked right into the pond. Now, I felt bad that I laughed at it, but it reminded me that at any moment I can disengage from the beautiful, spectacular opportunities of this world around me. And although cell phones and smart devices and the internet are fantastic, I love technology. Oh, but life.
Life is so much better than being immersed in a phone. I love that you say that, because it's a problem we're having now. There need to be some understandings of how to use it as a tool and not let it become a way of life. A way of life is interacting with life and with people and with the joy of nature. Now, you mention in the book Thornton Wilder's Our Town Emily. I remember reading that a long time ago, about a young girl who has died, looks back at life and says, does anyone realize how wonderful life really is? And Edward, you talked about your grandmother and that she was very present in the world and engaged and endlessly available. Now, I have an amazing coincidence. My first book was Life is No Coincidence, and it really is. Nothing is really random. And I have a great coincidence with you, and I'd like to share it with you and the audience. So you tell the story of finding a picture of your grandmother's English boyfriend when she was 16, before she was married, in a very special box of her treasures, right?
And
I have a box of such treasures, and in that box is a photograph of my first boyfriend when I was 16, just months before I met my husband, and it made me smile so to remember first love and the awe.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yes, the awe of every experience, no matter good or bad, because they're not really good or bad, that we're meant to experience and ultimately find beauty and goodness in. So like your grandmother, I am reminded of that, and I am a grandmother, and I hope that one day my 7 grandchildren will remember an incident as you did, where I was present with so much love, because I try very hard to be there and to pay,
to really hear them. And we can't, you know, sometimes it looks like the young people in our lives, they're not listening, but they are. And whether they seem to be distracted with something else or the latest game or their homework or whatever it is, just our presence and the fact, like you said so beautifully, that you're putting attention and effort into being available and listening to them. This is imprinting upon them, and they will no doubt remember that.
And consistency. It's not a once in a while thing. It's, you know, I was with my grandchildren yesterday, and one of them is extremely intuitive and very sensitive and very gifted. And she made it her business to bring a game to show me, to do a dance routine to show me, to eat food, because she's not a very good eater and she knows I want her to be healthy, to eat so she could see. And she even said to me, I know it's very important to eat, to live, to enjoy life. You know, she has to push herself a little because she's not really much of an eater. So I for all listeners out there, it's very important, especially in these changing, challenging times, that you really listen to the children and that you really show awe for their love of life and don't diminish it, but raise it up, because it is a great gift within them, and hopefully they can hold on to it and not lose it and then have to rediscover it many years down the road, as many of us have had to.
And children need to be heard just like adults do. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I valued about my grandmother, is that she listened without correction. She always listened generously, that's what I call it, because she listened through to the end of what we were saying, and she would nod her head in understanding, no matter how fantastic our problem was or our ideas were. And we had the sense that we had an ally in her, and the less she said, the wiser she appeared to be, and I learned that from her. You know, you don't have to have a quick answer all the time for everyone. Just the act, the presence of warmth, of being with somebody, can be so soothing and instructive.
Excellent. Yes, absolutely. So what are a few ways, you know, factually, to commit to awe? There are ways to begin to do this, you know.
Yes.
So what are they? You just said praising and nurturing the talents and contributions of each person and family or group. And what else?
Well, let's start with technology. I would
okay.
say if you went on a dedicated experiment of getting some balance between online time and in-person time, that this is going to make a terrific contribution to your experience of awe in life. I would say for families that if they haven't departed from this practice, they could return to the practice, let's say it that way, of eating together without smart devices. Practices will definitely help return a sense of awe. Something else that is so simple and is so powerful is gratitude practices. For example, before you go to bed in the evening, to just take a moment and think about the last person you had anything to do with, and then express some gratitude silently in your mind for them, and then go back to the previous person that you had something to do with, and then express some gratitude. And what this does is it creates this kind of secret love affair between you and the people that you spend time with. You don't have to say anything to them in person. You yourself just feel that gratitude, and I guarantee you that the next time you see these people, you'll have this secret smile on your face because you know you've been loving on them silently without their knowing anything about it. You also mentioned
so wonderfully, beautifully said, but you also described acquiring faith, and it's sort of like this, by studying the role models of faith and kindness and compassion in people in your life, or studying the life of historical figures, both present and past. Yes, it is a way to smile from within yourself and to encourage yourself to raise to a higher level. And they feel it. It comes through. Yeah. The next time you smile at them, they will feel and know something about themselves that's wonderful because you know something and you have gratitude.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Is it possible? Now, this is a hard question. Is it this is a hard question for many people. Maybe not for you and I who have been working in these realms for many, many years, but it is hard for ordinary, everyday people who are rushing about their lives to think about this. But is it possible to become more compassionate than you are? And how does this begin? You tell a story, actually, about being in South Africa, which we must tell our audience, and that maybe will help you show how sometimes sadness or tragedy or an event can put you on a path. Yeah.
That's exactly right. Sometimes tragedy will knock us into a deeper inquiry in our life. But to answer your question, is it possible to become more compassionate? I want to assure the listeners, you absolutely, definitely. We may be out of practice. Because the social conditioning, if you watch movies and you read the news and watch television, there isn't a strong message about how to be kind to yourself. So a person really has to come to it on their own. And I think that what we have to do is interrupt the tendency so many of us have is to be mean-spirited to ourselves in the silence of our own minds, and the things we say to ourselves we probably wouldn't say to a child who is trying to learn something. So the first step in becoming more compassionate is to notice where you aren't being compassionate and then to interrupt it. I think in the 12-step programs they say you can't do anything about a problem if you don't admit that it's there. So
right.
The first
yeah.
step is to become aware that I haven't been very compassionate to myself. And the incident in South Africa you're talking about is when I witnessed the brutality and I didn't do anything about it. And for the longest time, my language in my own head was so cruel to myself. And so I had to interrupt it and speak with a kinder set of words and phrases than I had up until that point, and that's really what turned it around. To redirect my self-language is a very powerful practice.
Yeah, you were on a train, and it was a segregated train, and somehow a black man had gotten onto the wrong car and was beaten and taken away, and it was very traumatic, because in your heart you knew you wanted to do something, but society at that time in that place said you weren't able to, so you were caught, and you wrote this about this story. I have struggled with the inclination to live from goodness because of how it has put me at odds with the instinct of self-preservation. I have struggled with speaking up for goodness when doing so would put me at odds with others and with the way everyone understood things to be. But when I have risked doing and saying what goodness would have me do and say, the results, while not always comfortable, have been satisfying in a soul-nourishing way. Learning to stand up for your truth and help others is a way to feeling great love and compassion for life and to honor our similarities rather than buying into the differences between people. And it's also a way, I see it that way, for healing many injustices and finding greater awe and joy in life. Now, I had a similar incident. Of course, I was much older than you, and I was walking down the street, and I saw a man pulled out of a car, and he was being beaten literally to death, and I screamed, "Stop it! You're killing him!" in my loudest voice, and they ran away. And it was a moment of acting, I saw it as courageously and honestly, but maybe not that, because I didn't even think. I just did it. Was the courage of my soul talking out. And later people said to me, "Cheryl, you could have been hurt. What made you do that?" Because it was right.
Yeah, you see your goodness. You were in connected. Yes, you were following that soul light that Maitre Eckhart was talking about. And I had to learn to get back to that, because I knew, just like you knew, what I could have done. There were any number of things I could have done that I didn't do. And that decision really weighed heavily on me. And now I'm more inclined, like you, to scream on top of my lungs.
Yes, well, as I say, you were younger when that happened, and probably when I was younger, I would have hesitated too, and most people do, out of fear. But we realize fear is not the reality. The reality is the goodness of our heart and soul, and the right thing will usually happen as a result of that.
Yes.
Now, what would you like people to take away after reading your book? The most important one fact that they might take away with them.
The one that we started with, that this goodness, this light in them, they don't have to stress to create it. It's there. It's not something that we have to withdraw from the world to find. It's there in them today in whatever they're doing. And just by turning to it, they're going to see, like the Thornton Wilder novel, how terrifically beautiful they and their world is.
Yes, and in speaking of that beauty, you have the words of writers who sought to live with balance, and you mention a poem, Desiderata, by American writer Max Ehrman, who instructed us to go placidly through the noise and haste of the world and to remember that peace can be found in silence and in holding true to the quiet voice within that knows your personal truth and resonates with the wisdom of the universe. Stay calm and know that we are all interconnected, and by resisting separating us by religion, race, gender, or any other label, we redefine our own divinity within. In each Reiki class that I teach, Reiki 1, I read that poem with my students to establish a bond with universal love and cooperation. So when I saw it in your book, I was very touched by that. Very touched.
Wonderful.
All right. Yes. I want to thank you, Edward, Fuljun, author of Ordinary Goodness, for offering ways to develop and appreciate kindness, compassion, and love in order to live a purposeful life, empowered with hope, and giving many ways to deal with struggles of depression and addictive tendencies. For more information on how to create meaning and beauty in our lives and in the world, and to purchase this book, go to OrdinaryGoodness.com. In summarizing today's episode of Healing From Within, we have discussed themes that relate to altruism, integrity, values, and a code of conduct, all which change as events and the many people who inhabit our daily life experience their own encounters with human and physical challenges. We have discovered that if we value caring for others and in turn get to appreciate the goodness within ourselves, we can handle daily life in a more positive and hopeful way. Edward wrote, "I can imagine a world in which we are kind and compassionate to each other, regardless of faith, nationality, gender, or political point of view. I can't see a way for that to come into being, though, yet. If there are signs that hang on businesses announcing, 'No Episcopalians allowed,' or 'No heterosexuals allowed in this store,' or 'Christians not welcomed in this community,' or 'Divorced people not served in this restaurant,' in the Bhagavad, Krishna indicates that there are many paths to the ultimate goal of union with the divine. I take it to mean that not everybody thinks the same way or travels the same path, and that what works for me may not be the right for another, and vice versa. Edward and I would ask our listeners to join us in a walk, holding hands and being joyful about having a physical life in the first place, finding hope no matter what challenges face us, and shedding ordinary goodness, kindness out into the world, inevitably bringing about the changes that conquer fear and limitation and allow harmony, balance, and peace into an ever-changing world community. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, and invite you to visit my website, CherylGlick.com, to hear leaders and change makers, visionaries, spiritualists, scientists, metaphysicians, and educators share ways for our personal development and for improving the quality of life. Shows may also be heard on webtalkradio.net and dreamvision7radio.com. Thank you for listening.